text without comment. I want to give you some extracts from Virginia Woolf's To the Lighthouse. She is a wise woman, a very wise woman. She wrote To the Lighthouse in 1927, and she was born in 1882, so she's, what, 45 years old? She's a very wise woman. It's a marvelous expression. The book, To the Lighthouse, the book itself is a talisman. The symbol in the talisman is the lighthouse. Now, I hope that you've been reading it yourself or you know a little bit about it. If not, it'll just be unfamiliar to you, and it's up to you to familiarize yourself in some way with the material. "Yes, of course, if it's fine tomorrow," said Mrs. Ramsay. "But you'll have to be up with the lark," she added. To her son, these words conveyed an extraordinary joy, as if it were settled. The expedition were bound to take place, and the wonder to which he had looked forward for years and years, it seemed, was, after a night's darkness and a day's sail, within touch. Since he belonged, even at the age of 6, to that great clan, which cannot keep this feeling separate from that, but must let future prospects with their joys and sorrows cloud what is actually at hand, since to such people, even in earliest childhood, any turn of the wheel of sensation has the power to crystallize and transfix the moment upon which its gloom or radiance rests. James Ramsay, sitting on the floor, cutting out pictures from the illustrated catalogue of the Army and Navy stores, endowed the picture of a refrigerator, as his mother spoke, with heavenly bliss. It was fringed with joy. The wheelbarrow, the lawnmower, the sound of poplar trees, leaves whitening before rain, rooks cawing, brooms knocking, dresses rustling, all these were so colored and distinguished in his mind that he had already his private code, his secret language. Though he appeared the image of stark and uncompromising severity, with his high forehead and his fierce blue eyes, impeccably candid and pure, frowning slightly at the sight of human frailty, so that his mother, watching him guide his scissors neatly round the refrigerator, imagined him all red and ermine on the bench, or directing a stern and momentous enterprise in some crisis of public affairs. "But," said his father, stopping in front of the drawing-room window, "it won't be fine." I'm just excerpting little sections of the book for you. It was growing quite dark, but she did not let her voice change in the least as she finished the story, and added, shutting the book and speaking the last words as if she had made them up herself, looking into James's eyes, "And there they are, living still at this very time. And that's the end," she said. And she saw in his eyes, as the interest of the story died away in them, something else take its place, something wondering, pale, like the reflection of a light, which at once made him gaze and marvel. Turning, she looked across the bay, and there, sure enough, coming regularly across the waves, first two quick strokes, and then one long steady stroke, was the light of the lighthouse. It had been lit. In a moment he would ask her, "Are we going to the lighthouse?" And she would have to say, "No, not tomorrow. Your father says not." Happily, Mildred came in to fetch them, and the bustle distracted them, but he kept looking back over his shoulder as Mildred carried him out. And she was certain that he was thinking, "We are not going to the lighthouse tomorrow." And she thought, "He will remember this all his life." For the mother and his son, 6-year-old son. Notice how a great writer tells the story, not mythically, but magically. You don't hear the story in your ear. You hear the story in your being. The art of an artist is different from the techne of a storyteller, a mythic storyteller. There's a difference. What is the difference? Her personal experience is your personal experience, is able to be your personal experience. That's the magic of it. You can hear a myth, but a work of art like this, which has a magical language basis, creates the experience in you. It's able to come to you, to be in you. The experience in a myth is in the ritual. A mythic language always is expressed then in the ritual. But a magical language tends to want to be expressed in the person. When life sank down for a moment, the range of experience seemed limitless. And to everybody, there was always this sense of unlimited resources, she supposed. One after another, she, Lily, Augustus Carmichael, must feel our apparitions, the things you know us by, are simply childish. Beneath it is all dark and is all spreading. It is unfathomably deep. But now and again we rise to the surface, and that is what you see us by. Her horizon seemed to her limitless. There were all the places she had not seen, the Indian plains. She felt herself pushing aside the thick leather curtain of a church in Rome. This core of darkness could go anywhere, for no one saw it. They could not stop it, she thought, exulting. There was freedom. There was peace. There was most welcome of all, a summoning together, a resting on a platform of stability. Not as oneself did she find rest ever. In her experience, she accomplished here something dexterous with her needles. But as a wedge of darkness, losing personality, one lost the fret, the hurry, the stir. And there rose to her lips always some exclamation of triumph over life when things came together in this place, this rest, this eternity. And pausing there, she looked out to meet the stroke of the lighthouse, the long, steady stroke, the last of the three, which was her stroke. For watching them in this mood, always at this hour, one could not help attaching oneself to one thing, especially of the things one saw. And this thing, this long, steady stroke, was her stroke. Often she found herself sitting and looking, with her work in her hands, until she became the thing she looked at. That light, for example, and it would lift up on it some little phrase or other which had been lying in her mind, like that, children, don't forget, children, don't forget, which she would repeat and began adding to it, it will end, it will end. She said, it will come. It will come. When suddenly she added, we are in the hands of the Lord. What brought her to say that? We are in the hands of the Lord, she wondered. The insincerity slipping in among the truths roused her, annoyed her. She returned to her knitting again. How could any lord have made this world? She asked. With her mind, she had always seized the fact that there is no reason, order, justice, but suffering, death, the poor. There was no treachery too base for the world to commit. She knew that. No happiness lasted. She knew that. She knitted with firm composure, slightly pursing her lips, and, without being aware of it, so stiffened and composed the lines of her face in a habit of sternness that when her husband passed, though he was chuckling at the thought that Hume, the philosopher grown enormously fat, had stuck in a bog, he could not help noting as he passed the sternness at the heart of her beauty. It saddened him, and her remoteness pained him, and he felt as he passed that he could not protect her. And when he reached the hedge, he was sad. He could do nothing to help her. He must stand by and watch her. Indeed, the infernal truth was, he made things worse for her. He was irritable. He was touchy. He had lost his temper over the lighthouse. He looked into the hedge, into its intricacy, its darkness. The silly giddiness in the world, then, she thought, intimating by a little pressure on his arm that he walked uphill too fast for her, and she must stop for a moment to see whether those were fresh molehills on the bank. Then, she thought, stooping down to look, a great mind like his must be different in every way from ours. All the great men she had ever known, she thought, deciding that a rabbit must have got in, were like that, and it was good for young men, though the atmosphere of lecture rooms was stuffy and depressing to her beyond endurance almost. Simply to hear him, simply to look at him. But without shooting rabbits, how was one to keep them down, she wondered. It might be a rabbit, it might be a mole. Some creature, anyhow, was ruining her ever evening primroses. And looking up, she saw above the thin trees the first pulse of the full-throbbed star, and wanted to make her husband look at it, for the sight gave her such keen pleasure. But she stopped herself. She never looked at things. If he did, all he would say would be, "Poor little world," with one of his sighs. At that moment, he said, "Very fine," to please her, and pretended to admire the flowers. But she knew quite well that he did not admire them, or even realize that they were there. It was only to please her. Ah, but was that not Lily Briscoe, strolling along with William Banks? She focused her short-sighted eyes upon the backs of a retreating couple. Yes, indeed it was. Did that not mean that they would marry? Yes, it must. What an admirable idea. They must marry. Can you see her art? She's exquisite. "We can't all be Darwins," he said. At the same time, he doubted whether you could have your Darwin and your Titian if it weren't for humble people like ourselves. Lily would have liked to pay him a compliment. "You're not humble, Mr. Banks," she would have liked to have said. But he did not want compliments. Most men do, she thought. She was a little ashamed of her impulse, and said nothing while he remarked that perhaps what he was saying did not apply to pictures. "Anyhow," said Lily, tossing off her little insincerity, "she would always go on painting because it interested her." "Yes," said Mr. Banks, he was sure she would, and as they reached the end of the lawn, he was asking her whether she had difficulty in finding subjects in London when they turned and saw the Ramsays. "So that is marriage," Lily thought, "a man and a woman looking at a girl throwing a ball." "That is what Mrs. Ramsay tried to tell me the other night," she thought, for Mrs. Ramsay was wearing a green shawl, and they were standing close together watching Prue and Jasper throwing catches. And suddenly the meaning, which for no reason at all, as perhaps they are stepping out of the tube or ringing a doorbell, descends on people, making them symbolical, making them representative, came upon them and made them in the dusk, standing, looking, the symbols of marriage, husband and wife. Then after an instant, the symbolical outline, which transcended the real figures, sank down again, and they became, as they met them, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsay watching the children throwing catches. But still for a moment, though Mrs. Ramsay greeted them with her usual smile, oh, she's thinking we're going to get married, Lily thought, and said, I have triumphed tonight, meaning that for once Mr. Banks had agreed to dine with them and not run off to his own lodging where his man cooked vegetables properly. Still, for one moment, there was a sense of things having been blown apart, of space, of irresponsibility as the ball soared high, and they followed it and lost it and saw one star and the draped branches. In the falling light, they all looked sharp-edged and ethereal and divided by great distances. Ah, but how long do you think it'll last? Said somebody. It was as if she had antennae trembling out from her, which, intercepting certain sentences, forced them upon her attention. This was one of them. She scented danger for her husband. A question like that would lead almost certainly to something being said which reminded him of his own failure. How long would he be red, he would think at once. William Banks, who was entirely free from all such vanity, laughed and said he attached no importance to changes in fashion. Who could tell what was going to last, in literature or indeed in anything else? Let us enjoy what we do enjoy, he said. His integrity seemed to Mrs. Ramsay quite admirable. He was thinking of himself and the impression he was making, as she could tell by the sound of his voice and his emphasis and his uneasiness. Success would be good for him. At any rate, they were off again. Now she need not listen. It could not last, she knew, but at the moment her eyes were so clear that they seemed to go round the table, unveiling each of these people and their thoughts and their feelings without effort, like a light stealing underwater, so that its ripples and the reeds in it and the minnows balancing themselves and the sudden silent trout are all lit up, hanging, trembling. So she saw them. She heard them. But whatever they said had also this quality, as if what they said was like the movement of a trout when, at the same time, one can see the ripple and the gravel, something to the right, something to the left, and the whole world is held together. For whereas in active life she would be netting and separating one thing from another, she would be saying she liked the Waverley novels, or she had not read them, she would be urging herself forward. Now she said nothing. For a moment she hung suspended. So get yourself a copy of that and read the thing. It's a quality of shared experience which you need to have. It's not an input. It's a quality of shared experience which we all need to have. When you finish reading To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, and only if you finish reading that, then go to William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying. Faulkner writes in the very same stream of consciousness, only it's a masculine view, whereas Virginia Woolf is a very feminine view. But the stream of the consciousness is the same. And if you do this, we might be able to put Virginia Woolf and Faulkner together, put To the Lighthouse and As I Lay Dying together, like those two masks, and get a glimpse, a very rare glimpse, of just the flow of the stream of consciousness as it goes through the symbolic shapes in the deep interior. It's not a Jnana yoga, it's not a Hatha yoga, it's not a Karma yoga, but it is a kind of a yoga, kind of a yoga of civilization, which we're happening to, or be able to investigate here, and it might be interesting to you. But have the experiences first. Today is our day of beginning on talismans, and for the next couple of weeks we'll show our talismans and talk about our talismans. And it's very important that you do this, that you find some way for yourself to do this. To have made an amulet and to have made a talisman and to be able to wear them and to be able to have them. And you need to be able to have done this. It's important now, but it'll be much more important in 6 months from now, 7 months from now, when we start that phase of history. History is the conscious side of what mythology is all about. Instead of arranging people in feeling tones, people are arranged in thought forms. And as mythology is very, very intelligible in terms of what we do, in terms of the ritual basis, history is very intelligible in terms of who we are. And the relationship between person and history is very much the relationship between right and myth. So one is a magical occurrence of what is naturally occurring in the other. So it's important that you have for yourself this material. Now the only thing that I can offer you is honesty and continuity. I cannot project from myself the wholeness to you, but you can engender it in yourself. None of you are without that capacity. But in order to engender it in yourself, you need to do certain exercises, as it were. And these are exercises towards that end. And to the extent that you really do them, to that extent there will be an interiorization of the meaning of what you have done. And to that extent there will be a capacity to radiate that in your lives. So it's as important as you want to make it. I won't let down my end of it, and you have to do yours in your own way. Let's start with Molly's talisman. Let's start with yours, which grabbed me as soon as you came in the doorway.
I guess I haven't seen it by now.
this particular morning, I suddenly spread my legs apart and thrust my arms up, my head back, and just held that posture for a while. And the feeling that swept over me was one of opening. None of this was defined in words, really. It's very much a feeling. Flung up as one might jump into an open space and not know where one's going to land, and it's one of freedom. And I like it.
That's fantastic, Molly.
Are you all able to see that? Maybe stand and let them. William Blake saw that too, Molly.
There's another symbol. Can I just call Molly? It's really hidden because it's a real ancient symbol that you'll see on cave walls.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
very
right.
Very much.
It's legitimate.
That's quite interesting, yeah.
I like it too. I didn't do my amulet, and I have to tell a story. I found this at a garage sale, and I think what happened was I manifested it at a garage sale. As you know, I was going on vacation and I didn't have all the criteria. Number one, I didn't have the criteria that it was supposed to have been something we made by hand, so I polished it real well. Before I went on vacation, I went to a swap meet and I saw this wonderful locket that was Art Nouveau, and it had a piece of glass and there was a painting under the glass which was done with the color of butterfly rings, and it had that kind of velvety color. And I thought, oh, this is my talisman. I didn't know two amulets should be done in silver, and it was sterling. So I bought it, and when I got to Chicago, I was staying with a friend, and I suddenly thought, this belongs to her. So I gave it to her. And then last week, I had a feeling, well, I'm going to find my talisman at a yard sale, or my amulet at a yard sale. And it was very reasonable, and it's sterling, and I found it around 11 o'clock in the morning after I left church, and I knew I would find it at a yard sale. And it just is exactly the way I feel it should be. I feel, you know, almost as though, you know, Dracula can't get me now. And it's just, I've been wearing it on and off all week, and the minute I put it on, I feel very good about it. But my amulet, I did do some thinking about, and I was thinking about symmetrical things in nature and the discussion we had last week or so, and I thought, well, if you really get down to it, everything is numerical and everything is very precise. I'm going to do something very precise and very symmetrical. So I spent about 2 hours making this kind of like a cross that I wanted sun to radiate out from various directions on. And I started gluing things together, and if you work with that glue, you know sometimes you can't squirt it out. So I took the top out and I poured too much out, and I had glue everywhere. I mean, my coffee cup was sticking to the bottom of my lip. And as a result of that, it is anything, the gold part is anything but symmetrical. And I'm thinking, well, I guess it's not supposed to be symmetrical. So I did the best I can, and I kind of like it. I like the sparkly stuff in there. I just wanted to have a feeling of radiating out. And I like to wear it right where my heart chakra would be. I feel, the minute I put it up there, I feel kind of warmth, and I like that.
Show it to Molly so she can see it too.
Where did you get the gold? Where did you get the gold foil?
Oh, well, it was the gold paper. It's gift wrapping paper that and then there's sparkly stuff. I'm Libra, and I wanted it to look like a what's that stone?
Opal.
And that's where I goofed up, because I thought it was just the stuff you'd shake on, but it was a liquid, and it's plastic. It took about 12 hours to dry.
Let's come to Robert.
Come on out here, Robert.
Also goes with my nebula. And one of the things, I work with the transparency again, with working with energy passing through it, and realize that even though it's transparent, it can reflect. So you can see, if you focus in the distance on the surface, you can see yourself in it. And part of that in that lies the power of seeing yourself in it, being in it, and then transferring the power through it.
Could you take that around with this illustration in the other hand and just let people see how that form occurs in an ancient Coptic symbolic presentation? Now, I know that Robert didn't have archaeological experience in the early Coptic church, but his talisman, as you can see, just like Molly's talisman and Jerry's also, they're very individual. And yet they are universal, they are timeless. Yeah, these forms here. Let's come to Sina. Thank you.
I just thoroughly was taken over by this whole project. Few notes that scribbled out that I had, because I wanted to get in whatever, that I had looked forward to making this even more than the amulets, but I did wait until the scheduled week. I was way ahead of myself in putting designs on things, but I waited making this. And I wanted it to be a complement to my amulet, which it I think is, if any of you didn't see my amulet, it was this shape, and so I...
Jerry, can you hold that up while she speaks?
...stayed with the shape, and I wanted it to be a continuation, so those three curves are reflected in these three, and I was hung up on the Trinity until I finally got to finishing this. And I made paper patterns, and I was all taken up with it, and then I started cutting. So I got the gold foil, and I wanted to make it all in one piece. So
Donna would like to know where you got the gold foil.
At a hobby shop in North Hollywood. From Laurel Canyon and near Ventura. So I got the scissors, and I sacrificed a pair of pretty good scissors in the process. It probably can be sharpened. I wanted to make it all in one piece, which this is. This was my first try. And I cut around, and as I cut around, I had tremendous feeling, because I wanted to make this kind of a spiral, but I wanted to have it all in one. thing started flopping out, and it just poured out, and it wouldn't go back, and I worked and worked. And I was amazed at the energy that was created and that was in my hands, because you spoke, was that the machine? Whatever you may think is probably all true. But I can certainly manipulate it back. So I spent a lot of time trying to work it back, and finally had to. I thought this would be stiff enough to make the projection that this has. Finally had to get the band to make it in the shape that I wanted, but then wasn't really satisfied with that, so made this. Then I made another one. I just wanted the projection idea, and that to me looked a bit too stiff. It was out, but it was rather dangerous. not very friendly. And yet, it has the shooting out effect.
That's an image from one of those Star Trek movies, The Planet Swallower.
I have that feeling about it. But it just made me all hyper. So since I couldn't shape it, and after the frustration, the whole episode seemed to me to be very symbolic of the whole frustration of trying to project and then trying to control the projection.
Yes, the situation was a part, is at that juncture always a very real part of what is happening.
And then just working with the metal itself is very hard on the fingers. At the time I happened to be playing your recording where you came to the part, well, so sitting 6 hours is uncomfortable, what a shame.
Yes.
And I was getting these little cuts and having all this trouble, and I thought, yeah, it is too bad, but I have to continue on. At the time I was doing it, I was far too jittery to write about it, but I did this yesterday on the feelings that I had. But then I went another trip to the same hobby shop and got the coil that I could manage to put in the shape and attach, because I wanted a free-flowing part of it. And I am very happy with it.
Wonderful. Let's jump to Song Hawk.
Gifts, as was the crystal and the snake. And I've been accumulating them for years, and I never knew what I was going to do with them. And this was quite a project. I mean, I started at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't finish until midnight that night. I had to bake and cook and paint and juggle and glue, and I even had to borrow the glue gun and the glue. Of the universe coming together here, and it didn't turn out the way I wanted it. I had envisioned it as being a piece of, I wanted basically a crystal that focused out from my third eye, and this just, it didn't work. No matter what I would do with this crystal, it would not focus out, and I couldn't get a small enough piece of clay that would hold the wiring. So I ended up using it over my heart chakra, and almost everything on here is full of energy. I deliberately put the crystal pointing down to the ground to pull the ground energies up through, and the snake formation to let them come out. And of course, the earth grounds all of the energies that are flying around and makes sure that it does focus itself up towards me. And it, do you feel when you look at it?
Like fine.
A lot of it, sunburst.
So it's a radiant.
Yeah, fullness.
I wanted to create that effect of actually a centrifuge kind of effect, and the clay didn't quite do it. I learned the spirit. I was a cult.
It helps by contrast emphasize the feather, though.
Yeah.
The ring of feathers gains more by the center not being dynamic.
Uh-huh.
Should we come to Jane? Can you people see it okay?
Good. Yeah, it's just supposed to be like motion on each side of it.
Ed needs to see it behind you.
Yeah, I never knew if it was a dream or a vision, but you know how sometimes you wonder what you are and what you really look like? One time, I won't go into detail, but it was rather meaningful and stayed with me for many, many years. And I think it was, I'm sure it was Egyptian, but I'll just give you a headline. I dreamed that I awakened and I was lying in a sarcophagus. And it was, and there were figures, individuals standing side with staff, and then I realized that I was alive, I wasn't dead, and then I just dreamed that I floated up into the air, and I could see myself lying in the sarcophagus, and then up here in the air I saw like a mirror. I thought, look toward this and I'll see what it really looks like, and I looked into it. Couldn't see a face. There was no face. It was just sheer energy of light. And but on each side of this, like a sun, only more so, was like hummingbird wings or moth wings, just fluttering like this. So just, and this has been in my vision for many, many years. Because I know that this is true of all of us. We are pure light, pure energy, just indescribable, and no face. Okay. But it's like something that reflects. It's like, I can't put it into words. So this is over and over, and I thought, I wonder if I could dare do this. How could I explain it? Anyway, I went back down into, laid back down into my body, and that was, and then I sat up, and then I walked out with the rest of the ones who were waiting.